I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio. Every week, my guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every single food dollar we spend either protects or degrades the environment, produces foods with high nutrition or empty calories, and either helps pay a fair wage or keeps farm workers among the working poor. We get to make that choice every time we push a cart through the grocery store, visit the farmer's market, and eat at a restaurant. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Wasn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful. And in fact, this morning I was out there, with a sledgehammer cracking through some ice on the water trough. And looking out at the cows, who were, some of them were covered with frost.
Oh, sure.
And the acres were just covered with a fine fog, a haze that was just beginning to lift. It was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
It was just gorgeous.
Anybody who doesn't live there can't really appreciate it.
You know, but I think a lot of us have good imaginations.
and you described it good, too.
And we think about what it's like to kind of look at cattle through a haze and to see that warm sun beginning to rise above it.
And to smell the air.
The air is crisp. It's clean. And, you know, that's one of the beauties and the challenges of raising 100% grass-fed beef. You've got to be out there. They've got to have hay. We raise the hay that we then feed them during the winter time. And it is a challenge because we have to raise our cattle for almost a full year longer than the conventional farmers who rely on grain.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit more work. But it's definitely worth it because, you know, I guess I'll restate that. It takes a little bit more management.
There you go.
Planning. Certainly, we're not paying for the corn. We're not paying for the oats. We're not paying for a lot of the inputs that others have chosen to use.
Yeah.
And it's something that a lot of beef farmers do. We do it on grass and grass alone. This is done less prevalently with dairy.
Oh, yeah, I would think.
Lots of dairy farmers do depend on different kinds of, we call it feed strategies, using grains and other amendments in order to get the most milk they can.
It's all about milk production.
From their cows. And so they manage things very differently.
Sure.
And today we're very fortunate to have on the line someone who has been, with other people, a pioneer in the 100% certified organic.
Wow.
Dairy business. Good morning, Cheyenne. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing fine.
Good, good. We have Cheyenne Christensen, who with his wife, Katie, and his 8 children, operate Grazing Acres in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. And they have a 100% certified organic, all-grass dairy operation and have been doing so for a number of years. And Cheyenne, you are from an interesting background. You're from a farming background, aren't you? But it wasn't a conventional one.
Yeah, I consider myself fortunate actually to have been raised with parents that believed in organic all the way through back in the 70s and 80s when agriculture was going all the other direction. My dad refused to use chemicals and instilled that concept in me from a very young age that I grasped the same ideals. And so when we bought our farm, it wasn't a matter of whether we would become organic. It was how fast we could convert this farm over to organic.
Great. Now, when did you purchase your farm, and how long did that transition take?
We actually started in the July of 93 with a rental agreement with Farm Credit Services. And through the course of the following year, we're able to get into a program with the state of Wisconsin that they had that kind of gave the banker security, similar to FHA in a way, and that allowed us then at the fall of 94 to be able to purchase the farm itself.
Mm.
So it was a lot of hoops, a lot of paperwork, a lot of strategy, but we managed to pull it off, and we had a banker that just could see the possibilities and see how driven and dedicated we were to making things work. So otherwise, it was, we'd talk to a lot that just didn't get it, because we, you know, we didn't have a lot of assets. So it wasn't just a simple solution for them.
Right. And that is something that a lot of farmers who are in sustainable and organic do have to deal with. And that is the idea that they're not using the methodologies and may not have the assets immediately that the conventional banking system with its conventional banking instruments may immediately recognize. So that took a lot of work, as you said. Now, you were certified organic what year?
We started grazing in 94. Spring of 90, as soon as we had access to the land, we put fences in and converted over the next, you know, through the next 3-4 years to get everything set up for organic. We certified in 99. We actually could have in 98, but Organic Valley wasn't this far north yet. So we had to wait until 99, and then the markets really grew, and they were looking for more milk.
Cheyenne, you know, lots of people romantically, those who are not farming, they may think, well, everybody raises their cows on grass. What's the big deal? But that's not the case. Doing things 100% on grass, not everybody is doing it. Does it bring with it, I mean, other sets of challenges?
Yeah, it's definitely, it is challenging. You know, you've really got to be on top of things, because grain is a crutch in a way. It'll cover over or, you know, help you through rough spots. And when you go to 100% grass, you know, and unfortunately we've had a lot of dry spells in northern Wisconsin over the last decade, the first thing that's going to slow down is the grass because of the shallower roots. So we're going to see it, you know, just almost instantly in the bulk tank on milk production when our system has hurdles in it, where, you know, on a conventional type system, you've got everything is more controlled in a sense, where weather isn't near as much of an issue.
So when the weather isn't perfect, which it hasn't been, we've had our pastures dry out in early July.
Yep.
And when that happens, the cattle are simply not getting the kinds of nutrients they need to either produce the meat that, which is what I'm looking for in my beef cattle, or the milk, which is what you're looking for with your cattle.
Yep.
So, all right, so you're very dependent on the changes in weather. You know, they're going to really make a big imprint on you. So what have you done in order to kind of buffer those kinds of weather shifts?
The first thing we started doing years ago was planting some annuals. And that would be, you know, like we started out with fall oats so that we could have some plant in early August, and then in October into November we'd have waist high oats, which are still a grass. They haven't made heads yet or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But extremely high nutrition going into winter to give the cows a boost before the cold weather hits. And then when we got into the drier years, we started planting Japanese millet or sorghum Sudan, which is a warm season annual, and will grow through the dry weather slower, but it still keeps growing. That would give us then something to graze through the whole summer, and we would kind of supplement with the pastures when there was something, or, you know, and that also slows the rotation down on the pasture. So we're giving the grass more time to grow when it's dry.
Got
when it.
When
it gets extremely dry and the pasture is totally shut down, then we've had to feed some hay to supplement also to slow the rotation way down. So it's we've got several strategies. The second phase of this has been, we're trying to give the ground more organic matter, more cover, so that we're not drying out as quickly and that we can capture and hold on to whatever rain we have.
Got it.
That has been through mob grazing, trampling down as much residue as we could, which forms a mat over the soil. And we are seeing results from that over just a few years. So I feel confident that long term, that strategy will be the most successful. Because the other weird thing within these weather patterns is that we have these intense dry spells, but we also have intense rains at times when we finally get some.
Right.
So it may come at 2 or 3 inches in a dump,
yeah.
And we've got to, I want to keep all that moisture on my farm.
Wow. You know, that is so interesting, Cheyenne. You're saying things that I know my husband right now, who's listening to the show, he's also taking note of, because we tend to have some high ridges that are dry. You know, the soil tends to be thinner on the ridges of the farm. And so thinking about doing those annual plantings certainly is a very important idea. The other is one that for most people I think would be counterintuitive. In other words, when something is really dry, when something, the grasses are really, you know, drying out, some would not think about mob grazing, which is that practice of putting a lot of cows on a small piece of property so that their hoof action really tramples something down. But that is that's a strategy you use because the mat that forms then also holds in moisture. Is that how, did I hear that correctly?
Yes. Yep. And I should clarify, we've only been mobbing, you know, been really intensively mobbing with young stock. With the dairy cows, you know, letting grasses mature, we'd lose too much quality. So the milking cow needs, you know, higher nutritional value. But with our heifers and bulls, we've been able to do some mobbing, letting it get, you know, mature on top. There's always some green clovers and alfalfas and things down in the bottom. So they'll eat, you know, the tops off, they'll clean out the green, and then we'll trample the rest down. And it's basically, you know, it's almost like putting an umbrella over the soil then to have that forage trampled over so that the sun isn't baking right on the soil. The wind isn't drying it out as quickly because that mat is protecting it.
You know, you're talking about this, and I'll tell you, I'm listening to what you're saying, Cheyenne, with kind of a split mind. One is that of the fairly new grass-fed beef grazier. That's what my husband and I are doing, 100% grass-fed beef. And the other is from my years as a city girl. You know, I grew up in the Bronx. I spent most of my youth, even through the college years, in New York City. And to me, it's kind of fascinating to listen to what you're saying because it really does talk about the many kinds of knowledge that any sustainable farmer really has to kind of build within themselves and within their families. Because you've talked about the soil, you've talked about the forage, you've talked about dividing up your herd amongst the bulls, the heifers, and the cows, and knowing what their nutritional needs are so that you can use them effectively as you build your pastures to higher and higher quality with each growing season. And, you know, that is the kind of thing, that's what we as food lovers gain from. You know, our food gets better when farmers have and use these kinds of management practices that not only produce great food, but actually restore our soils and water. You know, it sounds like you're balancing and working with lots of different factors, you know, the heat, the water, the animal, the soil. Why aren't more dairy operators using these kinds of approaches, do you think?
I think part of it is fear of the unknown. The system has been geared towards production, confinement-oriented systems for decades. So that, you know, and that's what's taught in universities. So, you know, it just becomes the normal. And then when you start looking at something outside of that, you've got questions. And that even can go all the way back to the lender, where if a farm has a fair amount of debt and you start talking to your banker about, well, I'm going to change courses here, you may have issues right there at the beginning. And he may say, I don't know about that, you know, because it's not necessarily so proven. And this is going back, you know, like when we started grazing 20 years ago, it was just totally unique. And everybody thought it was crazy. I mean, the nutritionists and all the conventional systems were coming out against grazing because you can't feed a cow that way and it can't be done. And it was just, you know, so bunch of grazers just ventured out and blazed our own trail. And then when I stopped feeding grain, it was the same thing again. Then I even had a lot of the, you know, a lot of the organic farmers and that had already made that, you know, the first step. Even they had trouble envisioning not feeding grain to the cattle. So it takes a brave soul, in a sense, to be able to venture off that path, and somebody that is very in tune with their system around them, so that you're observant, notice things, make adjustments. And I like to do things just in steps. Over the years, we've always seen little adjustments here and there, observe, see what happens, and make changes from there. And that's not, you know, not doesn't suit everybody either. Some like to just kind of have a system, and they follow that. But if you really want to work with the natural system, which is, you know, what a lot of us are venturing into, and become more self-sufficient and self-sustainable, that is the only way to go.
You know, have you noticed that other farmers are doing this too?
It's starting to get a lot more popular. I've done a lot of sharing over the years, speaking at conferences and writing, to be able, you know, just share what we do on our farm. For farmers that are wanting to go no grain, but also a lot of guys that just would like to cut back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and they know that, well, if I can do it with no grain, then it certainly should help their system go from 10 pounds of grain down to 4, or, you know, something like that. So I've probably talked to just as many farmers that want to reduce grain levels as I have ones that want to eliminate grain.
You know, Cheyenne, I would suspect that lots of my friends who are from the city might be hearing this and may not realize how much a cow eats. How much does a cow consume in a day?
A lot. No, it's amazing. I mean, cows are just, they're just like huge, hungry vacuum cleaners out there. And you know, basically, on technical terms, you would figure like 3 to 4% of the body weight in dry matter. So, you know, like hay is 85% dry matter, so you could take a 1,000-pound cow and calculate that out. Not so bad. But grass will be 85% moisture or more. So now we have to get a tremendous amount of forage into her rumen in order for her to get enough to eat and to get enough nutrition out of what she ate. So that, you know, that gives us is another challenge, because the system has been geared towards grain feeding high density foodstuffs, which means the cow doesn't have to eat as big a quantities or need as big of a rumen. So now when we switch over to grazing systems, the breeding in the in our country has been going down this, you know, opposite path.
So
now you have another challenge in that the cows aren't necessarily prepared or able to eat the amounts of forage that they need. So a lot of us in the grazing side are looking for, you know, breeding cows for bigger, deeper bodies with bigger rumens so that they can eat enough forage.
Wow, that's so interesting. So let me just get kind of rephrase that for those of us who may not be that familiar with the cows. So you're saying that over the years, because they were feeding nutrient-dense stuff, that cows got narrower?
Well, I think they kind of bred for that. You know, it was in the way the breeding went, you know, as they bred for production and they fed more concentrates, it's, you know, that's the type of cow that ended up coming out of it.
Wow. So
you're now we're trying to go backwards, in a sense, to get back to that older, bigger, deeper-bodied cow.
All right. Now, you are milking what kind of cow?
We have Holsteins.
You have Holsteins. But is your Holstein, does it look a little different from the Holstein that you tend to find on other farms?
I would say, yeah. You know, ours are a little shorter. Still not necessarily smaller. We tend to have some larger cows. A lot of the grazing movement has moved towards a smaller framed cow. We've been using some of our own bulls out of cows that really did well in our system to promote those genetics, so that we have a, you know, very deep bodied, and trying to get a little wider, you know, just a wider cow overall, so she's durable, because, you know, our cows are walking every day back and forth from the barn for milking out to the pastures, and I'm liking what I'm seeing so far.
Okay, so Cheyenne, you mentioned something. You said durable. Now, how long does a cow that is in a conventional system live, and how long are your cows living?
The last data I've seen shows that the average age of the U.S. milking herd is like 3.8 years. You know, and they don't calve until at least 2 years. So that means that they haven't finished their second lactation. So it's a very, very young cow. And in our system, it's very common to have cows in the 8 to 12-year-old range. And we go all the way up to, we have a cow still on our farm that's right around 20 years old right now.
Wow.
You know, that is a huge difference between the conventional approach, excuse me, and the certified organic approach that has grazing as a core value. A 3.8-year-old cow in the conventional system, why is it that they only last that long?
The cow, I mean, we got to keep in mind the cow is a herbivore. So, you know, the cow was designed to eat forage and grass. And, you know, some grain can still, you can still keep the cows pretty healthy and longevity is there. But as you start to push more and more unnatural things into her system, you're going to have more obstacles. And then simply just the stress of making her produce multiple times more than what, you know, was ever naturally intended. So, you know, there's several facets to that. And then a lot of times they're on concrete their whole life. They never, you know, they're not out on the soil. They're not eating fresh grass with enzymes and nutrients and good things in there. They're not getting the sunshine that has other benefits. So, you know, if we consider all those pieces, there's no one answer, but I think it's a combination.
Mm. Wow. That is such a really startling difference in the longevity of the cow itself as an indicator of health. You're dedicated to the approach that you're using. Do you know, are there any changes in the milk itself that come from doing what you're doing?
Yes, dramatic changes. We've actually been part of studies, had our milk tested multiple times for things like what we're seeing mostly is like beneficial fatty acids. So you hear a lot about omega-3s.
Right.
Eat fish to get those healthy omega-3s. And grass-fed dairy has immensely higher omega-3 levels.
Really?
And what's happening in our society today is that we're getting far too much omega-6s, so it'll be, you know, maybe even 10 to 20 to 1 omega-6 to omega-3. Our milk is testing at around 1 to 1 omega-3 to 6. So
wow.
It's the ultimate ratio that you can attain. We've even seen it go as far as 0.756 to 1 omega-3. So we're inverting the ratio even.
Wow.
And then another beneficial fatty acid is conjugated linoleic acid, which is CLA for, you know, that's what you hear typically. And that's what was, you know, 20 years ago, there was starting to be some research coming out about the benefits of CLA. So that's kind of what got us started on that path way back, that, you know, we wanted to get off grain. And it took us a few years. It was into the, like, 98. Around 98 is when we stopped feeding grain. So we have been grain-free since that.
Wow.
And then omega-3s started getting more press, you know, in more recent years. And my question would be, what else is in there then that we don't even know about yet?
Right.
Because these things are fairly recently discovered. So too often I think humanity, we like to think we've got all the answers, and yet something new has just been discovered in recent decades that's in our milk when the cows are eating grass, when they're getting a more nutrient-balanced system. And then there's actually been some research. Organic Valley did some on our farms individually, a group of farms across the nation, comparing the different feeding regimens and testing pasture samples, milk samples, so that we could try to see some correlations. There was a larger study done nationwide where milk samples have been compared organically and conventionally from the grocery store shelves, showing that the omega-3s and CLAs are dramatically higher in the organic milk. And that would go back to organic requires pasturing, so we have a lot of grass going into the cows.
Wow. You know, we've been talking this morning with Cheyenne Christensen of Grazing Acres, where he and his family raise 100% grass-fed dairy cows. They are a certified organic dairy operation that sells through Organic Valley out of Chautauqua, Wisconsin. And you know, Cheyenne, you just mentioned the various tests, and we've found that those are true also on our farm, where we do 100% grass-fed beef, and that is one of the major reasons why. In addition to the management practices, which we find to be also sensible, it is because of those nutrients that are found in higher levels, the omegas, for instance, in our beef, but also because of the conjugated linoleic acids, which are not found once you start feeding grain in animals. And so at Bull Brook Keep, that's really important for us as well. Cheyenne, how can somebody kind of get a hold of you? How can they find out more about what you do?
I do a lot through emails and phone calls. I get calls from around the country, folks looking for more information. And email is a good way initially because I can forward articles, links to articles I've written that people can read through. And then if they have questions, they can be more directed, so I don't have to keep always repeating the same basic information.
Right. And I might mention that Cheyenne is a prolific writer and contributes regularly to Graze Magazine and other publications where he willingly shares a lot of his experiences and understanding of what is going on. So, Cheyenne, as we're kind of getting here to the close of the show, what kind of advice or what kind of thoughts would you want to leave with other dairy farmers?
I recommend always, look into everything. Broaden your horizons, talk to other farmers. When you do make choices, make them slow, make them very with just little by little, because the other biggest problem can be sometimes farmers jump too quickly into something. And everything I do, I believe in, it's wonderful, but it takes a different management effort, different thinking, different and there are hurdles with like weather patterns. So trying to convert something too quickly can give you too many bumps in the road and a sour taste. So do things, deliberately, slowly, make adjustments as you go, and then, it'll happen a lot easier because, there's always going to be some obstacles when you convert from one farming system to another, from the soils, the animal health, all around the whole system.
Oh, thank you. I think what I'll do is, as we wrap up here, is to provide people with your email address. It is ckfarm@chibarden, and I'll spell that out. It's chibardun, as in Nancy, .net. Cheyenne, thank you so much. This has been really enlightening.
I've enjoyed it.
Good, and I look
forward
to
having me on.
Great, and I look forward to visiting your farm sometime this coming season.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Well, have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay, bye bye.
Visit my website, bronxtobarn.com, to download this and past interviews, to learn about my farm, and to reserve 100% grass-fed beef. We deliver to Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. Thanks.